It's been an encouragement to be in your the Sunday school discussion this morning. It's a little new to me. We use the quarterly, but that's okay. Doesn't really matter, I guess, how you go about it, but as long as it's based on the Word. And also appreciated the opening meditation on the value of good, clean, pure water. And the fact that Jesus is the source of that water. This morning I want to talk a little about giants. I want to turn your attention to 1 Samuel chapter 17. Are you facing giants today in your life? Personally? Or as a body of believers? Are those giants threatening to overwhelm you? And are you struggling to know how to deal with them? If you're like me, sometimes possibly you feel like just giving up. But as we talk about the giants this morning, my prayer is that somehow through the Spirit that you each can be encouraged, can be strengthened, because later on we will discover that there is answers to overcoming those giants. And that those answers are free. Those answers are available to us. I think I'm going to go ahead and read this chapter. It's a lengthy chapter, but I tried to decide which where I should start and where I should stop, but it's kind of hard to decide, so I think I'll just read 1 Samuel chapter 17. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Shaco, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shaco and Azekah in Ephes-Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. And he had an helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel, and said unto them, Why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. And the Philistines said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons, and the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. And the 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle, and the names of his 3 sons that went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and next unto him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. Jesse said unto David his son, Take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves and run to the camp to thy brethren. And carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. And David rose up early in the morning, and left the sheep with a keeper, and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight, and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion of the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, Have you seen this man that is come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine, and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine, that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, So shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, Why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. And David said, What have I now done? Is there not a cause? And he turned from him and toward another, and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. David said unto Saul, Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him, and smote him, and delivered it out of his mouth. When he arose against me, I caught him by his beard, and smote him, and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. And David said moreover, The Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, Go, and the Lord be with thee. And Saul armed David with his armor, and he put an helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off him. And he took his staff in his hand, and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in a scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and ruddy, and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, Am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. Then said David to the Philistine, Thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield. But I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee, and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into your hands. And it came to pass, when the Philistine arose, and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted, and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag, and took thence a stone, and slang it, and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him, but there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof and slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and of Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines until thou come to the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell down by the way to Shearim, even unto Gath and unto Ekron. And the children of Israel returned from chasing after the Philistines, and they spoiled their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. And when Saul saw David go forth against the Philistine, he said unto Abner, the captain of the host, Abner, whose son is this youth? And Abner said, as thy soul liveth, O king, I cannot tell. And the king said, inquire thou whose son the stripling is. And as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, whose son art thou, thou young man? And David answered, I am the son of thy servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite. So we have David here setting forth an example for us to overcome the giants in our life, in our lives. And I just want to go down through this chapter and pull out points that stood out to me, and trust that it could be a means of encouragement. So we have the Philistines on one mountain and the children of Israel on the other mountain and a valley between. And they were in battle, one against another. The children of Israel and the Philistines. The Philistines were known as a group of people, big-built giants. And it presented a problem to the Israelites. Today, we are in battle. Today, you might say, we are on one hill, and our enemy is on the other hill with a valley between. And there is a battle to win. It is a battle against a battle of right and wrong. The leaders of the forces do not have the same characteristics. We have one leader being a righteous, a holy God, and a God of order. Sin cannot stand in his presence. And we have this God making it possible that his people could win. Israelites had God's promise that he would provide a cloud during the day to go ahead of them, and a cloud of fire, a pillar of fire by night. He promised the Israelites that he would fight their battles for them. And another thing was the Old Testament law was a means of bringing them into a relationship to make God's... It was a means to bring them into a relationship with God so that the resources that God had was available, could be made available to them. This thing of sin had to be taken care of. God is a God of love. And he wants what is best for his people. One way that is shown to us is the fact that he sent his son for us to redeem us from our own sinful state. God's focus is to bring salvation to each person in the world, which in turn will give them what He has for them, and that is peace and happiness and true freedom and eternal life. The other leader is Satan, the devil. He is a god of lies, destruction, and sorrow, and we have that all through the Old Testament. Eve, for example, in the garden, Adam and Eve had a perfect relationship with God, and He come in and challenged God's direction, and ruined the relationship that man had with God. And his focus is to bring total havoc into humanity. He is a god of hatred, jealousy, envy, deceit, and you can go on and on with that list. So you see, there is two forces. There is two choices for man to identify with, either with God and His church or with Satan and his angels. One thing I want to make clear is that this is not a competition to see who is going to win. God is going to win. God and His church, His kingdom, is going to win. And it's Satan and the devil who is opposing that, trying to draw out of that as many people as he can to destruction. So that is one thing I want to make clear. This is not a race or a competition to see who is going to win. God is going to win. The question is, are we going to win with Him? So that is why we have the Philistines, or the children of Israel, fighting against the Philistines here in this chapter. That is why Israel was facing giants in their day, and today we face giants also. Just to go into a little detail about Goliath here. I was not aware of this, but there is a little discrepancy in the term cubit here. There is a modern measurement, and there is a biblical measurement. The modern, we think of a cubit as being 18 inches. And the span is, if I understand it right, the distance between your little finger and your thumb. That's a span. Bible times, a cubit was 21 inches. And a span was half a cubit. So roughly, modern times, a span, I think it's right around 8 or 9 inches. An adult man's hand from the tip of his little finger to his thumb is right around 8 or 9 inches, which equates to half a cubit. And in the Bible times, a span would have been a little larger than that. So Goliath could have been anywhere from 9 to 10 3/4 feet tall. And the total weight of his armor and weapons was around 250 pounds. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of the size of the giant that the Israelites faced. In verses 8 to 10, in verses 8 to 10, in verses 5 and 6, it describes Goliath and his size, and it is with those numbers that he came, it is with confidence in those numbers that he came to battle. That's where his faith was, that's where his confidence was in himself. And it is with those numbers that he came and challenged the Israelites in verses 8 and 10. Why are ye come to battle? "What are you doing here? Choose you a man that I might fight against." Those who do not have God in their lives have no hope for victory. I take that from verse 11. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Just go back with me to the time when Samuel told Saul to go and fight the Amalekites, slaughter them. And they did to a certain extent. That is where Saul failed. That is where he disobeyed. And that is why they were in this situation here. They were dismayed. They had no hope for victory. Faith in God is a prerequisite to victory over the giants in the Christian's life. Turn to Acts 3:16. Acts chapter 3, verse 16. "And his name, through faith in his name, hath made this man strong, whom ye see and know. Yea, the faith which is by him hath given him this perfect soundness in the presence of you all." So it is through faith that we can have confidence, we can have victory. Ephesians 3:12, "In whom we have boldness and access with confidence by the faith of him." James 1:6, "But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea driven with the wind and tossed." So you see, faith allows the believer to view life from God's perspective. Jump over to verse 25 in 1 Samuel 17. "And the men of Israel said, Have ye seen this man that is come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. It shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him and after this manner, saying, So shall it be done to the man that killeth him." Faith allows, David was able to see the giant from God's perspective. When Israel said, "This man," David said, "This uncircumcised Philistine." When Israel said, "Surely he has come up to defy Israel," David said that he should defy the armies of the living God. Israel said, "The man who kills," David said, "the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel." David saw it as a spiritual battle. It was not physical. He saw the giant as being fallible. David had God on his side. When this takes place, the believer realizes that God is the one who is ultimately being challenged and not man. Sometimes we get, when we face giants in our lives, we get discouraged, we get too focused on our own thing. It's really God that's being challenged, not us. Yes, we have to fight, we have to put forth effort, we have to win. We have to make sure we're on the winning side. The giant challenged Israel because they were representing God and he saw them as a threat. So while it seems everything might be against you, remember it is because you are representing God that it seems that way. And we have, as we'll get this later, but we have promises to take with us to battle. And the giant wants you. So maintain your faith, and it will help you keep a proper perspective. perspective on the giants that you face. Because of this perspective, the Christian realizes that victory can be his. Because he knows God doesn't let his people fight their own battles. God is the Christian's resource. Matthew 21:22, "And all things whatsoever ye shall ask in prayer, believing, ye shall receive." Yes, the giants might become bigger, might seem to get bigger and bigger. But we have the bigger advantage through faith. John 16:33, this same power is made available to us through faith. John 16:33, "These things I have spoken unto you," this is Jesus, "that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world." And if Jesus overcome the world, he promised us that we can have that same power, that we can overcome the world. And if that isn't convincing enough, faith allows the believer to claim the promises of God. 1 Corinthians 10:13, "There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man." But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it. What greater promise can we take with us to battle? That is a promise of victory. "But will with the temptation make a way to escape." He will make a way to victory. Moving on. Obedience is foundational to the Christian's victory over the giants in his life. Verse 17 to 20. We have Jesse and David. We can see into Jesse and David's relationship a little bit. David was out attending the sheep, and he came in to his father, and Jesse asked him to take these things and go see how your brethren are getting along. Victory hinges on our commitment to obedience. You go back through the life of David, he was responsible to take care of the sheep. And I don't know how long he had been taking care of the sheep. But if David wasn't a responsible person, I don't think Jesse would have sent him out there to take care of the sheep. Proof of that is the fact that he killed the lion and the bear. He had the courage to do that. Victory hinges on our commitment to obedience. Look at Saul's life. We already mentioned the fact that he did not obey, and neither did he have God on his side. Chapter 15:28. I think that's the verse that says, "Where God's spirit departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord came to him and troubled him." Lack of obedience. Unless we repent, God will let us to our own. That's chapter 16, back in chapter 16, verse 14. Okay, that's the verse where it says, the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him. Saul did not repent. He still wanted to be honored in front of all the people. So therefore, he had no basis for his faith, much less a hope for victory. So when we are without God, we live according to our carnal nature, and we are subject to its own characteristics. Back to David, the flip side, verse 20. So Jesse tells David to go take these things and go see how his brethren is getting along. David rose up early in the morning and left. Left the sheep with the keeper. See that responsibility. He left the sheep with the keeper. Well, you might say, well, that's just, common sense. Well, yes, but it's also responsibility. He did not say, okay, Father, I'm going to go, you know, the sheep's your business now. Do you think he would have been able to kill the lion and the bear if he was disobedient or irresponsible? You see, it was this work from day to day that prepared him for the greater work that he was facing right now, currently. These victories with the lion and the bear proved to strengthen his faith in God. Jump ahead to verses 34 to 37. David tells Saul, you know, thy servant had victory over the lion and the bear. And so if God gave me the victory there, how much more will he give me the victory here? That, you might say, was a physical battle. This is a spiritual battle. So, friends, this morning, has God revealed himself to you through some, you might say, small battle or some physical battle? Has he given you health or strength? Has he revealed himself to you in a physical way? Has he used nature to draw you to him, thereby inspiring you for the moment? Thank him for it and let it strengthen you for the battles in the future, because yours truly is the victory. Youth this morning, let this time in your life better prepare you for bigger and more important battles in life. If you are not winning now, very likely you will not win later on. Allow the struggles today to strengthen your faith in God, because no doubt as life goes on, Satan will make sure that your faith is tried to the very core. Experience victory today so that later in life you can look back and say, if God gave me victory over those little giants, he will give me victory over these bigger giants. Another point, faith maintains its focus when other things threaten to distract us. Back up to verse 28 and 29. Eliab sees David coming, and big brother sees little brother coming. And big brother has this bigger responsibility, and here comes little brother, seemed to Eliab as nosing in and wondering what's going on. David kept his focus on the Lord's cause, even when he was falsely accused. He could have picked a childish fight with Eliab. He could have said, well, Father sent me here, and I have just as much right and business to be here as you have. But he didn't do that. He could have felt belittled or offended. And when one feels belittled or offended, he loses his faith and walks away with his head down. David refused to trade God's image, God's work, God's battle for the protection of his own self-image, reputation, feelings, or his own glory. Right here, I believe Goliath was a dead man. Because if David would have succumbed to his carnal nature, there wouldn't have been a David to confront Goliath. How many times does relating to those closest to us prove more difficult than the real issue? How many times do we get distracted because of false accusations or judgments of others? And it just gets us all bent out of shape and derailed. And we forget, really, what are we doing? What was the real initial goal here? Like I said earlier, in my opinion, this was David's real battle. To know how to respond to his brother. to be able to maintain his conviction and courage that God would be with him. And then, after he was confronted by Eliab, the next person to confront him was the king. I guess I'm challenged when Saul came to him and Saul told David, "David, you just don't have a chance. You're a youth. Who are you? This man has been a soldier from his youth." So pray for faith that would carry us through such battles so that we don't lose our focus. Another point, faith relies on God, not on things of this world. In verse 39. So after David had his discourse with Saul there, Saul is like, "Okay, go ahead, you have my blessing, go ahead. But here, take this. Here's my armor, here's my sword, take this, because you're going to need it." What was David's response? In verse 39, "I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them." And David put them off him. You see, David was not accustomed to Saul's armor. It was too large, it was too heavy. He was not comfortable with it. Furthermore, it was not what he was used to going to battle with. When David killed the lion and the bear, he did not have Saul's armor. He had his staff and his faith in God. And that was all he needed. Saul's armor was not compatible with his faith in God. When you go into battle, just think a little bit. Let your imagination run. How would it have worked out if David would have took Saul's armor with him? He was used to battling with the help of God. And then, so he tries to take on Saul's armor. What must be done with the faith in God? They both can't go to battle. The two don't work together. It was either take Saul's armor and risk being defeated, or take his faith in God and be guaranteed victory. So the challenge is for us today, what do we take to battle with us? Are we guilty of trying to supplement our faith in God with the things of this world has to offer? There is plenty of institutions and programs that the world offers to guarantee us success. The world is full of warped doctrine and mixes it with sound doctrine and calls it an application study Bible. The world offers a whole buffet of institutions and programs to secure our financial well-being. What do we do with these things? What do we do with the faith of in God, with our faith? Let's put our future in the hands of God. Let's continue to take the Bible, prayer, and faith with us to battle, because that is the only way we can be guaranteed victory. With these weapons, the man of faith can enter into battle with confidence and boldness. Verse 40 to 48. David laid off Saul's armor, took his staff, chose 5 smooth stones, and his shepherd's bag, and his sling, and drew near the Philistine. That's what he was comfortable with. That's what he fought with. That's all he needed. All he needed was one weapon, and God could use that one weapon. And he drew near the Philistine, and just compare David's response here with Saul and the Israelites' response. When the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him. Verse 43, am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his God. 40, in verse 44, come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. David responds in verse 45, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the host, in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day the Lord will give me victory. The Christian will always offend his enemy because of the simplicity of his armor and his weapons. And when the devil sees us approaching with that, he knows right away he is doomed. Verse 46 and verse 47. The Christian will always give God the credit. And we see David doing that in these verses. We'll back up in verse 45. David says, I come to thee in the name of the Lord, in the name of God. The Lord will deliver me into thy hand. Deliver thee into my hand. The Lord will give thy carcass to the fowls of the air. And in verse 47, that all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with the sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's. So you see, the Christian will remember to give God the credit, not to himself, not look what I have done. Look what I have won, but what God has helped me do. And he wants it to be made public that there is a God, and that God is alive, and that his God is the one who helps him. And because of this, he wastes no time in entering into battle against the enemy. And that is the only way to victory. If we put it off, and put it off, and delay, that only makes matters worse. God always gives victory to those who are fully equipped with the weapons and armor that he provides. Back up a little bit in verse 40. Brought this out a little before. But in verse 40, he took a sling and stones. And then in verse 51... David slew the Philistine, slew Goliath, and he fell. And David ran to him, took his enemy's weapon that his enemy used, planned to use against him, and used that against the enemy. That is what happens in the Christian's life when he takes his faith in God with him to battle. God provides the tools and the weapons that he needs. And with his enemy's weapons, David made sure that Goliath was dead. He took his sword and cut his head off. The Christian ensures his enemy is dead. He utterly destroys any inroads or influence that the enemy might have tried to use. And he will sacrifice anything to do so. The Philistine fell down dead. David was the first one to run toward the Philistine. He sacrificed, you can say, his own safety. It's a little bit contradictory because he knew David was guaranteed the victory. So really, he was safe wherever he went, you might say. Many times the weakness of the enemy becomes a tool for the Christian. The devil also thoroughly hates when this happens. Psalm 57:6. I think that's the verse where he talks about the enemy digs a pit for him and he himself falls in. Psalm 57, verse 6. They have prepared a net for my steps. My soul is bowed down. They have digged a pit before me, into the midst whereof they are fallen themselves. So a victory today will weaken the enemy tomorrow. What happened when the giant fell? The rest of the Philistines turned and ran. The Philistines were counting on their champion, their giant. That was where their confidence and faith was. And when he was destroyed, they had nothing left. They were, in a sense, hiding behind him. Take the giant away, and the enemy is bound to fail. Just as Dagon could not fail, could not stand in the presence of the ark, neither could Goliath fail in the presence of David and his God. Just as one victory today weakens the enemy for tomorrow, so it strengthens those others around you to have victory in their lives also. Just as one failure in your life puts a drag on everyone else's life, so a victory encourages them. How different would this story read if David would have failed? We wouldn't have this example here this morning. In closing, turn to 1 Timothy 4:12. And so, youth and all of us this morning, let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. You don't have to be someone experienced. You don't have to be someone big and important to be guaranteed victory or to have a good influence. You don't have to be a certain age or have certain physical traits or abilities. But you do have to have faith in God, and make use of the weapons that he provides and depend on him, and you will be guaranteed victory. Trust that the lesson there of David could be an encouragement to each one of us. And if you are facing giants in your life, take David as an example. Use the weapons that David used, and God will guarantee you victory.